From Radio Sausalito in beautiful Sausalito, California, I'm Mitchell Field, and you are on the field trip. Welcome to The Field Trip, a few minutes of conversation each week with some of the most interesting people in the Bay Area and Marin County. I talk to artists and writers, actors, directors, musicians, some of the characters who make the Bay Area a fun and a fabulous place to live. So let's get right to it. In a 1912 article in the PG&E magazine, there was a description of a San Francisco building. 3.5 million feet of lumber, 270,000 cubic feet of concrete, 600 tons of iron used in the roof, 100,000 feet of glass used in the roof, 517 private dressing rooms, and a clubroom capacity of 1,100. It also had seating capacity for 7,400 people and a total capacity of 25,000. Well, no, it wasn't a hotel. It was an attraction which opened in the late 19th century. With heated seawater, swimming pools, a museum, restaurants, tropical plants, and seating for thousands of spectators, it was, in fact, the Sutro Baths, which some older San Franciscans can still remember going to. It's a vanished yet enduring piece of San Francisco history. My guest on today's field trip is historical consultant and lecturer John A. Martini, who's just published a fine new coffee table book about the place. It's entitled Sutro's Glass Palace, The Story of Sutro Baths, where John's mother Doris used to take him when he was a child. And he's here to chat with us about it all, so please welcome to the field trip, John Martini. Welcome, John.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, John, I just spent a very pleasant weekend reading your book and looking at the fine illustrations to get a much better understanding of what this place, which today is just pretty much a hole in the ground with some concrete piers, but what it used to be. So talk about whose creation this place, the Sutro Baths, was.
Sutro Baths was the vision and the ever-changing creation of Adolf Sutro, who was one of those 19th century millionaires in San Francisco who made just a pile of money in the pre-income tax days, in this case, up in the Comstock Lode in Nevada. He was an immigrant from Germany, and he'd been kicking around California since the gold rush. But really, it was the Comstock Lode in the 1860s and 70s. He was an engineer, developed a tunneling system. His profits from developing a tunneling system called, modestly, the Sutro Tunnel, he brought back to San Francisco, and he began to invest in the city. He at one time owned 1/12 of San Francisco. But unlike a lot of these millionaires who built monstrously large houses on top of Nob Hill, Adolf Sutro put a lot of his money towards developing public recreation facilities, and his most magnificent, some might say a folly, was the Sutro Baths. You described it perfectly, quoting that 1912 article. It cost him over $1 million in 1890s dollars when it was completed in 1894, and no one had ever seen anything like it. And it was really designed for the common man. It wasn't a place for the hoi polloi. It was the streetcar crowd, where people would come out on weekends and they could look at the exhibits or listen to free concerts for a very modest fee. You could go swimming in a day when public swimming pools were virtually unknown. And it was a huge hit, popular-wise, but again, never really profitable.
Now, he bought a lot of land out there on the point where the baths were. He built himself a mansion, I guess?
Right. The family story was that when he came back in 1879 from Nevada, he had a pile of money equal to about $25 million or so in today's money. And on a visit out to the Cliff House, he spotted across the street a house owned by an old friend from the Gold Rush days in San Francisco. And he and his daughter dropped in for a visit, and Sutro just fell in love with the place. It's a piece of land now called Sutro Heights. On the spot, he offered the owner $10,000 to sell him the hilltop. And from there, he just kept buying and buying. It really was the ends of San Francisco. Even today, the whole area is called Land's End. And yeah, at one time he owned the Cliff House, and his estate was up there on top of the hill at Sutro Heights, and adjacent to the Cliff House, he built the Sutro Baths. So he was a big property at the western end of San Francisco. One thing about the area was you could get land cheap. There were no city streets or utilities out there, but he saw it as an investment in the future of San Francisco.
Well, tell us about the actual construction of the place. It was a huge undertaking, I guess.
As I was researching the book, it really became apparent that he didn't have a final goal in mind when he began building. He had this idea that he would take this little pocket cove near the Cliff House, and he was going to first turn it into an artificial tide pool, a giant aquarium filled by the tides and emptied at low tide. And maybe next to it, he'd build an outdoor, they called it a swimming station. There was a lot of thought about swimming in salt water was really healthy, and that swimming in the ocean was a bit dangerous. So he was going to create a giant outdoor swimming pool protected from wave action. And over time, it grew. It grew from being a giant outdoor pond to a series of outdoor concrete swimming pools, as we think of them. And then he decided that the weather was inclement, and he needed to cover the room with a glass roof. And before he was done, he had a building nearly 3 acres in size, made of glass and wood, enclosing this complex of seven different swimming pools. If you wanted a timeline, he began his first work on building the artificial aquarium in 1886. And it was 8 years later that he finally opened it to the public.
Well, he called those pools tanks, right?
Yeah, not as welcoming a term as a swimming pool. Tank sounds like it's something that livestock would drink out of. That's really what these things were. They were rectangular concrete tanks. They were painted sort of a beigey white inside. They were very state-of-the-art for 1894, and they were heated to different temperatures. They were various sizes. The biggest pool was an immense thing that was over 250 feet long, and it was so big that they didn't bother to heat it. It was just the natural temperature of the ocean outside.
Let's talk a bit about how the baths actually worked. I know that he had steam engines in a powerhouse for the railway that he built to bring people there. That actually heated the salt water up from 50 degrees in the ocean to 90 degrees, right? How did that work?
If anyone's ever been around seawater a lot, it's like the most corrosive thing you can expose your fine engineering machinery to. So what Adolf Sutro did to heat the salt water in the swimming pools, he developed a system where he had a giant powerhouse with massive boilers that were turning steam engines. The reason for the steam engines was it created electricity for his private streetcar line. Again, his ego was boundless, called the Sutro Railroad. It was the steam that exited from the boilers and from the engines. It was all freshwater steam. So you had this superheated steam coming out every time the exhaust pistons went through their motion. The steam, as it exited, it was sent into what was called a condenser, a giant steel tank. And inside that steel tank, if you can imagine, there was a coil, maybe like on the back of your refrigerator. And through that coil of pipes was being pumped cold seawater. The steam heat hitting the cold pipes transferred the heat from the steam to the seawater inside. And the seawater inside, it came out at about 90 degrees. It was an adaptation of what they do on steamships at sea. Sutro just adapted it and used the discharge water to heat the swimming pools.
Well, I know he had something over there called the Sutro Pleasure Grounds, like an amusement park with a Ferris wheel and stuff, right?
Well, yeah. He was always looking for a deal. I mean, he may have been a millionaire, but he was always looking for ways that he could add to his attractions out there. And there, San Francisco had hosted an early World's Fair in 1894. It was held in Golden Gate Park, right where the Music Concourse and the DeYoung Museum and all are located today. When that fair ended in late 1894, Sutro, the newspaper story, say he was out there just bidding on everything. And all of these old rides and concessions and exhibits were crated up and stenciled with the big AS for Adolf Sutro, and they were transported over the dunes a couple of miles to the Cliff House area. Notably, he had four big rides, one of which was a 100-foot diameter Ferris wheel. He had them rebuilt on a little street overlooking the Sutro Baths, and he called it Merry Way. It was basically warmed-over rides from a World's Fair, and he got them cheap, And it was just another attraction, another place to, you know, where people could spend their nickels when they came out to Sutro's seaside empire.
Well, tell me about the experience that a visitor would have at the Sutro Baths. You know, what did they see when they arrived at the place, and what was the immense interior like, the grand staircase and the promenade?
Well, you got out there by, generally by taking either an electric streetcar, or there was still a steam railroad that ran around the cliffs of Land's End. They dropped you off a few hundred feet from the entrance to Sutro Baths. It was located on what's called today's Point Lobos Avenue. So after getting off public transportation, very few people, you know, had their own carriages in those days, you walked down Point Lobos Avenue, and the entrance was, it looked like a little Greek temple. And you walked in, and immediately as you walked in, there was stained glass overhead, potted palms and ferns growing. The descriptions say that when the baths were operating, there was a smell of warm salt water wafting up, and it was very humid because of the heated salt water. And you made your way down one staircase that dropped you down about two stories. You hit the first level of the baths, which was really, it was his museum. And the museum was the ultimate cabinet of curiosities. This is where everything that Sutro caught his eye while he was traveling buying from the old Midwinter Fair, it was on display with no real rhyme or reason. It was stuffed birds and specimens of rocks and minerals, stuffed polar bears, stuffed sea lions, mummies, snowshoes, all jumbled together. And he just put stuff there that attracted him and he thought people would enjoy seeing. You had to pay 10 cents to get into Sutro Baths, but the museum was free. You continued down yet another two flights of stairs, and then you hit the level where it was the promenade level. And in front of you was the immense spread of the swimming pools, almost two football fields in length. And you weren't at the level of the baths. You were on a promenade looking down another 50 feet to the baths below you. Sutro said he took his inspiration from the Colosseum, where people would, you know, be encircled looking down on an arena floor. He had musical performances going on, especially on weekends. They had vaudeville acts. They had swimming competitions. If there wasn't live music, there were the giant orchestrions, where it was a mechanical band playing. Yet more stuffed animals and birds, art exhibits. If you were coming to the baths just for, you could kill a day there, just, you know, being entertained for that 10 cents.
Well, it's great hearing about the Sutro Baths, and let's make that part one of my interview with John Martini. We'll continue next week. In the meantime, John Martini's book, Sutro's Glass Palace, with beautiful illustrations by Lawrence Ormsby, is published by Hole in the Head Press, and it's available at holeinthehedpress.com or at Barnes & Noble. There's even a free app where you can see the development of Sutro Baths from multiple viewpoints, and to see that, go to holeinthehedpress.com/Sutro app. And we'll continue the interview with John A. Martini next week. Well, thanks for joining me on the field trip today. I welcome your views and comments on the show, as well as your suggestions for future guests. My email address is mitchellfield@radiosausalito.org. The theme music you hear behind me is the tune Superjet, with the fabulous Marin sax man Noel Jukes up front. It's from the recording The Noel Jukes Quartet featuring Matt Clark. Please remember that the field trip can be heard Wednesdays at the top of every hour at 1610 on your AM radio dial in Southern Marin, countywide on Wednesdays at noon on cable channel 26, anytime on your computer at radiosausalito.org, and 24 hours a day as a free podcast from the iTunes store. If you liked today's show, please tell your friends, and if you didn't, well, please tell your enemies. So till next time, this is Mitchell Field saying goodbye, good luck, and see you next week.